And we've been watching the new Unsolved Mysteries on Netflix, which
Oh,
is super
we
good.
haven't started it yet.
It's super good. So we started that, and then after we watch him, Matt always has to watch something funny because he gets too scared. So we've been watching that Space Force show that's on Netflix that Steve Carell is in or
Oh,
whatever.
yeah, we're rewatching The
Yes.
Office, and they have like a ton of like, oh, you'll like Space Force. And I was like, maybe, but I have too many movies and shows that I want to watch already. And I'm like trying to get through some of them. And
Yeah, I mean the episodes are pretty quick. At least they feel really quick. And it's really funny, like, 'cause obviously, they're making fun of Donald Trump being a fucking moron. So, that's pretty great. Yeah, so that's what we did yesterday. Ate some popsicles and we went to bed at like 10 o'clock. And then I would like it was really fucking annoying because so like our city has a firework ban. Like you're not supposed to shoot off fireworks within city limits. Everybody fucking does it anyway, of course. And all these fucking morons were shooting off fireworks from our parking lot, like right outside our bedroom window last night. So like I would just start falling asleep, like be right on the brink of like deep sleep, and a firework would go off right outside the window, give me a fucking heart attack. So I did not get very much sleep last night.
We went to bed at 2 a.m. So,
Oh,
yeah.
that's rough. Yeah. That's pretty much it. And then yeah, and then today we were like, okay, like we're gonna have like a lazy Sunday, whatever. So I had like muffins for breakfast and we bought the cereal at the store yesterday and it's like a s'mores cereal, so it has like the Golden Graham kind of
Yes,
cereal and then it
I've
has marshmallows
heard
and like yeah. So Matt had never had it, but I was like, it's good, you'll like it. Well, now it's almost gone because Matt has discovered that he does really like it, and I have ha not had one single bit of it, and there's like maybe one bowl left in this bag of cereal.
just hide it somewhere.
So I know. He literally was just like sitting in bed this morning. He had a cup of milk, and then he had a mug that he kept refilling with the cereal. But he had the cereal in the bed with him. So I was like, why don't you just eat it out of the bag? But no, he would pour it into this mug and then eat it. And just, yeah. So then I really wanted tamales for dinner. And there's this really good, like, little Mexican taqueria down the road from us called El Taco Maestro. So I sent Matt over there to get some dinner for us, and he got us like these giant horchatas and like the like carnitas tacos and stuff, and he came in and he was like looking really upset, and I was like, are you okay? Like, did something happen? What's the matter? And he's like, the guy who lives downstairs with the short hair, so our downstairs neighbor, their Stewart is one of them. He's the talkative one. So he's like, yeah, Stuart caught me when I was on my way out and we were talking and the other guy with the short hair came out from the other apartment and he looked at me and he goes, you've gained some weight, man. And Matt's like, he's like, yep, sure have. So Matt was so upset. So all he ate for dinner was his rice and beans because this guy told him he was getting fat. And so then he was like looking at like pull-up bars and like exercise equipment on Amazon, like when I kicked him out of the bedroom to do this. And I just feel so bad. I was like, Matt's probably never been called fat
Yeah.
before or been told that he's gained weight before. I'm like, as a person who's heard that their whole life, let me just tell you,
Yeah.
it's always gonna suck. It always is gonna feel really shitty when somebody says that. I was like, you're probably going to think about it for probably the rest of your life. I do all the time.
Yep. Yeah, I was like, I wonder if he's
And
ever heard that before. Now, because it was like,
I'm pretty sure he hasn't.
I've been, yeah, hearing that like my whole life. So.
Yeah, me too. Like one of my earliest memories is like being a toddler in the bathtub and my dad pinching my stomach and telling me I was fat. Like as a toddler. But I don't think Matt has ever heard that before. I mean, maybe when he, because like he, when he was a baby, he was like really chubby. Like he was like a really chubby toddler. But I
Yeah.
mean, he's a string. He's, I mean, even now, like he has gained a little bit of weight, but he's still really skinny
Yeah.
because he's Matt.
Like, even if he puts on a little bit of weight, like, he'll still be.
Yeah. He just looks more normal sized now. But he's like really self-conscious about it, and I just feel so bad because I'm like, what a fucking asshole! Like, who just says that?
Yeah. Why would you ever say that to someone, especially someone that you don't really know?
Like we've talked to him maybe twice, and also like I mean, they're from Jamaica, so I don't know if it's like a cultural thing or something, but I don't know. I just know that you shouldn't just go up to people and be like, "Hi, you've gained weight."
Yeah, no, that's not.
Yeah. So that was how our evening went.
Poor
So
Matt.
I know. I was like, all right, I'll teach you how to deal with being told you're fat.
Excuse me, I have a doctorate in this field.
For real.
Yeah.
I know. He's wanted to learn a skincare routine. So I've been teaching him all about that. So now we're going to learn about what to do when people call you fat.
You say fuck them and then eat your feelings.
Yeah, I mean, you probably shouldn't eat your feelings, but that's what
That's
I
what I
do.
do. And I know I shouldn't, but I do it anyways.
Yep, and that's why I'm in therapy. Well, that's one reason why I'm in
Yeah,
therapy.
I was gonna say, I don't know about you, but there's lots of reasons for me.
So now that we've talked about
Yeah. Hey, it
that,
was
hi,
only 10
hello.
minutes this time instead of 15.
Wow.
So we're working on cutting it down.
That's pretty good.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So,
So you're welcome, guys.
hi, hello, everyone.
Hello. Welcome to our spoopy, creepy show.
Where we tell you
And
stupid booby crappy stories.
so prepare to be
And
spooked.
crapped to the max.
And that's it. So.
Bye. Okay, so this is episode 16, which means that I go first. And this week's topic was international serial killers. So basically, any serial killer who's not from America. So I didn't like want to do a white person at all. So I didn't look at Europe or anything. Like, I pretty much was just like, well, we haven't covered anything in Asia yet. So let me just look for serial killers from like China, Japan, like somewhere in Asia. So I found a Japanese serial killer that is like so awful. Like, this is probably the worst case that I've covered so far. And it might be like the worst case that I covered ever. Like, I don't know what's gonna top this. So
So when you told Matt what you were doing, he was like, I don't know what this is. I'm gonna look it up. And so, of course, like I can't see what he's
yeah.
reading. So he's on his computer and I just see his face getting more and more and more like upset. He's like, and he just keeps going, this is so fucked up. Oh my God, this is fucked up. And
Exactly.
so I'm very excited for this.
Okay. Well, okay. So I had this picked out. There was another episode a while back where I tried to do something and then I tried to change it last minute and do something else really quickly. So I wrote up most of this story really quickly. And then when I went back, I was like, oh, there's like three sentences on everything. Like, I really did not do a good job. Like, I thought I had it mostly done. So I went back and added a lot more detail. So, yeah, it's very interesting. So let's get into it. So today, I apologize in advance for any mispronunciation. All of these people's names are Japanese, but I feel like as far as other languages go, like my pronunciation of Japanese names is like higher than most other languages for me at least. Like
Like it's easier for
yeah,
you.
like it's a little bit easier for me. Probably just having my stepdads have Japanese, as you know, but for everyone. So he has a whole Japanese side of his family, and so I feel like and my sister's super into Japan and like everything to do with Japan, and she took Japanese in high school to like learn how to speak and write it. So I think that's super cool that she's into that. And so I feel a little bit more comfortable. Like, I feel way more comfortable pronouncing Japanese names than French names. So, okay. Which doesn't really have to do anything. It's just a fun fact about me. So, okay. So, we're going to talk about Tsutomu Miyazaki. And a lot of people know the last name Miyazaki because of Studio Ghibli and the Studio Ghibli movies, so Kiki's Delivery Service, Howl's Moving Castle, Princess Mononoke, yeah, so and Ponyo, and there's a lot of others. And one of my ex-boyfriends was like super obsessed with Studio Ghibli, but this guy has no relation, which is a very good thing after you hear his story. So just wanted to clear that up right in the beginning for anyone who's wondering. So Tsutomu Miyazaki was born in 1962 to a decently like influential family in the area. His father owned a major newspaper that was local to the Tokyo area, so they had like a decent amount of money and a decent amount of like political influence. But unfortunately, Tsutomu was born prematurely, and he was the product of an incestuous relationship between his father and his father's sister. So this was, yeah, so between the incestuous relationship and being born prematurely, he was born with his like hands were deformed and they were fused to his wrists. So in order for him to like move his hands, he had to rotate his entire forearm. So this Yeah, so this deformity made him a really easy target for bullies at school. He was frequently picked on growing up. He was a star student, though, until high school when his grades rapidly began declining and he was forced to give up his dream of being a teacher because his grades weren't good enough to go to the college that he wanted to go to. So instead, he went to a junior college and decided to pursue becoming a photo technician. So this is like in the 80s when photo technician is like a thing.
So what is that?
It doesn't say exactly, but I'm assuming he was one of the people who like developed the film.
Okay,
Yeah.
that makes
So
sense.
I'm assuming he was the one in the dark room, is what I
Yeah,
took it
that
to
sounds
mean.
fun.
I mean, yeah, it does sound fun. We had a dark room in my high school, actually. We had like a traditional photography class and a digital photography class, and with the traditional photography class, you got to like go in the dark room and develop your images and stuff.
At your high
Yeah.
school? Damn, your high school is fucking cool. My high school didn't have any of that shit.
Yeah, my high school is pretty well ranked nationally.
We had a swim team, but we didn't have a pool.
We had so many swimming sports that they like had to always take turns in a weird order. So it was like girls polo, girls water polo, and boys swimming and diving was the same season. And then boys water polo and girls swimming and diving was the same season. So they had to like switch.
Yeah, we didn't have a pool, but we had a curling rink.
I mean, priorities. We did not have a curling rink.
Youper life.
I don't know if anyone at my high school could have told you what curling was, honestly. But yeah, we had a pool, and there was like a swim team and a dive team, and like they were the same team, but they like What there's like a special diving section of the pool, and then there was like regulation, like water polo, lap swimming side of the pool. So we like had to do swimming for gym class and stuff.
Ugh, that's cool as
No, it
fuck.
wasn't. I hated swimming and I didn't want anyone to see me in a swimsuit. I still hate swimming because I don't want people to see how I look in a swimsuit. So
I mean, same,
just
but
my gym
I
teacher.
really like swimming.
I just told my gym teacher every day that I was on my period and he couldn't tell me no. Because he can't be like, oh, no, you're not. So I just told him every day I was on my period and I just like would walk laps up and down the stairs in the bleachers. There was like a few other kids who were just like, nope, I'm not fucking swimming. I was like, why would you want to swim? Okay, I had gym like second period, I think. And so it's like you go to high school. You do your first class, and then you're supposed to go swimming, and then you're supposed to walk around wet and nasty and smelling like chlorine for the rest of the day. No. So.
Yeah, I wouldn't like that. If it was like the last class of the day, I'd be all over it.
Yeah, no. So that was my. Yeah.
Okay, side tangent. Sorry, I was just like, what
That's okay.
the
Good tangent.
fuck?
So. Obviously being he like kept to himself, and when he was keeping to himself he developed an obsession with manga and anime, and apparently he had this collection of videos called Guinea Pig, which I don't know what it's about. I didn't look it up, but the second film in the series portrays a death very similar to his MO, so they think that that's like where he got the idea from. And
Okay.
some people attribute his nasty crimes to his obsession with manga and anime, but like, no. There's so that's
Yeah.
like saying, oh, well, if you have depression, you're a criminal. Like, nope. There's a lot of people who don't who don't like anime, who are
Yeah.
murderers, and there's a lot of people that like anime who are not murderers. So,
Yeah.
yeah. But so growing up, he had two sisters, and he wasn't close to either of them. They both were actually kind of like repulsed by him, and his dad wasn't very nice to him. The only person he really was close to was his grandfather, who passed away in May of 1988. So, after his grandfather's death, to feel closer to him, Tsutomu ate some of his remains. Didn't say like what state they were in, but I thought it said that he was cremated somewhere, so I think he just ate like some of the ashes.
What the fuck?
Yeah, that's like not good. And he's 20, he's
Don't do that.
26 at this point, so it's not like he's a little kid and you know, like, oh, I don't know what this is, let me eat it. Like, no, he's 26, he knows what he's doing.
Yeah, it's like that lady on My Strange Addiction who's addicted to eating her dead husband. He's like a bag of ashes, and she eats part of her husband every day.
Oh, yeah, no. Okay, so that was May 1988, and his first crime was committed a few months later on August 22nd, 1988. So Marie Kano, not Marie Kondo, Marie Kano, who was 4 years old. While I was playing in the park, and Tsutomu like pulled up and he lured her away from the park by asking if she wanted to go somewhere cool, like temperature wise cool. And so she got in the car, and Marie happily played with the radio buttons on the car as he drove her to a secluded spot in the woods. And then he led her to walk like 20 or 30 minutes down a path before they sat down. When they sat down, Marie sniffled, like probably because she was scared or tired or like just having a breakdown because she was 4. She doesn't know how to express her emotions.
Yeah.
And Miyazaki got really scared that she might start like crying and screaming, so he just strangled her to death with his bare hands right there. And then when she was finally dead, he took her clothes off and fondled her. And then he
No.
left her naked body laid out, but he took her clothes and shoes with him. Yeah.
What the fuck?
Yeah. Like, she's four. I don't understand how people get pleasure from children's bodies, but.
It's fucking disgusting.
Yep. So Marie's parents filed a missing person report when she like didn't come home from playing, and then this led to the police were like literally driving around her neighborhood and area announcing over loudspeakers that parents should keep an eye on their children at all times.
Okay, but also, why the fuck is this 4-year-old at the park by herself?
So I watched a video of a girl, and she was explaining this case, and she, I don't know if she knew this from personal experience or not, but she had said that like it was the 80s in Japan, and so it was like crimes against children were like unheard of. It was a very safe like area, and so people would let their kids go play because they didn't have a reason to think stranger danger or there's a reason my kids shouldn't be out by themselves. Like, kids would just go play at the park, and if they were by themselves, they were by themselves. If they met someone else, they like could play with the other kids. But yeah, it was like a very common thing at that time, which is why
That
police
seems
had to go
so
around and
weird.
yeah, and say, hey, don't do this.
Because, like, every 4-year-old I know, like, they would not be able to figure out how to get home. Like,
That's
they'd just be,
true. I don't
like, I just think that's really weird.
Yeah, I do too. But the girl who was explaining it, like, had a, I don't know, she knew that it was like, I don't know, that's just what they did in the 80s, and especially like in Japan in the 80s, I guess. So,
It's fucking weird. Okay.
yeah. So then the police are like, don't do that. Over 50,000 missing posters were put up for Marie, and the police spent almost 3,000 work days interviewing people who thought they saw something or who were suspects or people in the area. Like, just they spent over 3,000 days interviewing people. Yep. So if obviously that took time and was like the total number, but and kind of in the middle of that in October, so 2, 3 months later, however many months August and October are apart, he saw a little girl walking by herself, and this girl was 7, and he persuaded her to get in the car with him, and her name was Masami Yoshizawa. And then so Masami got in the car, and Miyazaki returned to the same spot at the park, basically the same spot that he had left Marie's body. So this time, after he choked the victim to death, he sexually assaulted and possibly raped her, and then took
No.
her clothing. So, and there's a lot of similar efforts that went into searching for Masami as they did for Marie, but especially because she lived so close, like they, it said they lived like 10 kilometers apart. I don't really know how big a kilometer is, but you know,
Yeah.
let's see, 10 kilometers to miles is 6 miles.
Okay.
Yeah, so yeah, they had no leads in either case, really. They were working really hard to try and solve them. And then, so that was October. In December, he convinced 4-year-old Erica Namba to get in his car. She was like crying in the back seat when he pulled into a parking space at a nature center. And he ordered her to take her clothes off and then took photos. And it was dark when he did that, so the light was like flashing in the back seat. There was a car that drove like the headlights passed through the car, and Miyazaki like freaked out and got scared that someone was going to catch him. So he straddled Erica as he strangled her, and then he wrapped her dead body in a sheet and put it in the trunk. But this time he dumped her clothes, so he didn't keep them, before driving away with her body in the trunk. And then as he was driving away, Miyazaki got his car stuck like a little bit off the road, and he was panicking because obviously he has a dead body in his trunk. And so he put his hazard lights on, he grabbed the sheet covered body from the trunk and like just booked ass into the woods to go dump the body. And when he came back to put just the sheet in his trunk, there are two men by his car. So he like was telling them like, "Oh yeah, my car just slid off the road a little bit. Can you help me?" So they helped him get out. Like they helped push his car out, and then he drove off. But being caught, almost caught, like inspired him to lay low for a little bit. So he didn't commit any more crimes for a while. But Erica's body was found the next day. And the two men were able to describe the car they had seen around her time of death, and they said like the wrong model. So it was like what it was something that was really similar though. So it was like they said it was like a four-door gold sedan, but they said it was like a Toyota and it was like a Honda actually, or something like that, where it was like really close. So the detectives like lost a lot of time investigating people who had that kind of car, and then it turned out it wasn't the right kind of car. So each of the victims' families had received some weird phone calls in the police department as well, with like only silence on the line. And then they said if they didn't pick up, then the phone would just keep ringing for 20 minutes. So he would sit there and let it
God.
ring and then not say anything when they pick up, which, yeah, I was like, that's weird. And then they got postcards with magazine letters cut out. So they cut the ma like he cut the magazine letters out and then put them together and then made a photocopy and then put the photocopy on the letters. So he wasn't actually sending the magazines, so they couldn't trace what letters came from what magazine and stuff, which I thought was interesting and very smart. But the one that Erica's parents received, and it wasn't in full sentences, it was just like words. So it read, "Erica, cold, cough, throat, rest, death." That was all it said. So Miyazaki had left his first victim, Marie's body, to rot in the hills, and then he went back for it and chopped off her hands and feet, and he kept them in his closet.
What the fuck?
And then he burned the rest of the bones in the furnace. And Marie's parents got a box that had photos of the clothing that their daughter was last seen wearing. They had like 20 baby teeth in the box, bone fragments, and ashes. So after that, a few days after, they received a confession that she had been murdered because the postcard read, "Marie cremated, bones, investigate, prove." And so the parents had the teeth tested to conclude whether or not they were Mary's, and the initial conclusion was that they were not. But then the examiner went back a few days later and he said that they were hers, so I couldn't find anything more specific than that. But Miyazaki heard the first news and was inspired to write a letter. He called it Crime Confession, was the title that he wrote at the top, and he sent it to Marie Kano's parents. So he wrote, "I put the cardboard box with Marie's remains in it in front of her home. I did everything from the start of Marie's incident to the finish. I saw the police press conference where they said the remains were not Marie's. On camera, her mother said the report gave her new hope that Marie might still be alive. I knew then that I had to write this confession so Marie's mother would not continue to hope in vain. I say again, the remains are Marie's." And that letter was signed Yuko Imada, which is a pun on "Now I'll Tell." So I thought that was interesting.
Oh.
It says pun. I don't know if they meant like,
A play on
yeah,
it.
like, or if it's, what is it called when you like mix up the letters? I want to
I don't remember.
misnomer, but it's not that.
Yeah,
And
I know what you're talking about, though.
palindrome. That's not a palindrome either.
No.
That's not right.
No. I don't
Okay,
remember.
well, it's one of those things. Maybe. So besides the letter, the only clue that police have was that the camera type was commonly used by printers, and photo developers, and that was his job, but they didn't have anything else. So he went to all this trouble, but the kind of camera that he used still gave him away a little bit. On June 6th, 1989, so he basically was killing the previous year, like every 2 or 3 months, and then he stopped for 6 months. And then he meets Ayako Nomoto, who's five. She's at the park, and he takes some photos of her playing. And then after a few photos, he's like, "Oh, hey, you should come in my car, and we'll take more photos." So she says, "Okay," because she doesn't know any better. And then Ayako is bouncing in the back seat as he drove her away. After he parked, he offered her some gum, and when he went to hand it to her, she made a comment about his deformed hands, and he got really upset about that and then put on gloves before strangling her. And he said, "Here's what happens to kids who say things like that," which is fucking awful.
What the fuck?
Yeah.
Like, if you know anything about kids, they're the most blunt, like, don't give a fuck, like, state matter-of-factly everything.
Yeah, like she's not saying
Like,
it to be mean or to make fun of you. She just is observing the
make.
world
Yeah. I mean, like, when kids notice something different than what they're used to or what they're, you know, what they've been seeing, they're gonna say something. Like, I used to babysit this little kid whose mom was really, really, really skinny. And he was probably, I think, like 3. And he would like pat my belly and ask if there was a baby in there all the time because I'm a fat kid. And the only fat people he had ever seen, like fat women he had seen, were pregnant women. Like,
Yeah, like kids just say shit.
yeah. Yep.
So, anyways, he wanted to make sure that she was dead. So he tied up her hands and covered her mouth before wrapping her sheet and putting the body in the trunk. Except this time, he took the body home and he made one stop on his way home. He rented a video camera. When he got home, he waited before carrying the body in, and then he stripped all her clothes off, wiped her with a towel before spreading her legs and taping her vagina apart, which is like the most disgusting thing
Wait,
ever.
like with tape, like sticky tape? What the
Yeah.
fuck?
He masturbated while he took photos and videos of her. And then when he was done, he tied her hands and feet and covered her body in three sheets. But it sounds like he left it where it was, because 2 days later, the smell of the dead body became unbearable. So he hacked off her head, her hands, and her feet to prevent identification. And then he left her torso near the toilet area of a cemetery. He roasted her hands in a fire outside his home. He ate some of the flesh and disposed of what was left, including her skull and feet, near a hill by his home. Then he realized that getting rid of the body so close to his house was a dumb fucking idea. Like, no shit, dude. So he collected everything back up. He scattered all of her bones in the woods, and he burned the hair, clothes, and the bloody sheets from cutting her up. They
Okay, so she was rotting for a few days and then he just still ate her.
Yeah.
That's fucking disgusting.
Yeah, this guy is
Okay.
literally the worst. Like, I can't think of a worse series of crimes than murdering, raping the dead bodies, hacking them apart, and then eating them of small children.
Yeah.
Like, yeah.
Okay, just keep going.
So, they only dispersed 10,000 missing posters before Ayako's torso was found. And despite Miyazaki's best efforts to remove all ways to identify her, they still figured it out by measuring the size of her chest and then also by confirming the last meal that her parents saw her eat, which was still in her stomach. So, they did make a positive identification still. And then, like a month later in July, he stopped and he like yelled towards these two little girls to come to him, to take pictures. And the younger girl went with him, but her older sister was able to like get away, and she ran home for help. And so their dad came with this, I don't know with the sister or not, but their dad came and stopped Miyazaki while he was in the middle of inserting a zoom lens into the man's daughter's vagina in the middle of the park.
What the fuck?
Yep. So Miyazaki started running like immediately and he was able to successfully flee the scene. But he was caught later that day because he tried to come back for his car. So, like a fucking
My
idiot.
God.
Once he was caught, he admitted to all four killings and he said of his crimes, "I felt all alone, and whenever I saw a little girl playing on her own, it was almost like seeing myself." Which I kind of get, kind of makes sense. But still,
So that makes you want to, because it reminds you of yourself, you want to rape and murder them?
yeah,
Like,
that's yeah.
what the fuck?
So when they raided his home, they found Marie's decomposing hands and feet in his closet. The pictures
No.
of the dead girls, and they found, guess how many child porn videos they found in his house?
Oh God, too many.
Yep. They found 5,763.
Holy
This guy
shit.
is 26, 27 when he's committing these crimes.
Oh my God. So he's probably been collecting it and watching it for a long
Yeah.
time. That's fucking disgusting.
When he was arrested, Miyazaki's father, who had some influence in the community, remember, he refused to pay for a lawyer for his son because he said that wouldn't be fair to the victims. And I'm like, Dad,
Good.
go, Dad, that is
Yes.
100% fair. Except eventually, his dad was so embarrassed by his son's actions that he committed suicide. Yeah.
That sucks.
Yep.
Well, I mean, I guess that the dad was like, fucking his sister, so I guess maybe it's not so bad, but still.
Yeah. So Miyazaki was examined by tons of psychologists, to see if he was fit to stand trial. And he was diagnosed with multiple personality disorder and schizophrenia, but he was still found sane enough to stand trial for his actions. And I honestly think he had mental health, like untreated issues. I mean, that's very clear, but I so
Yeah.
100% agree that that does not excuse him from his crimes.
Yeah.
When you go to that length, do that many like little details and have it planned out and all that, like, no, you're fucking guilty as shit.
Yeah.
So he was given a death sentence of hanging, which is the most common way that they execute the death penalty in Japan. But Aki wanted lethal injection like we have in America. I don't know if that's still true in Japan, but at the time that he was sentenced, it was. So that was like early 1990-ish.
That's crazy that it was so recent.
Yeah, that's what I thought. He really wanted lethal injection like we have in America, and he kept like petitioning for his right to choose the way he gets to die. But he is ultimately denied his wish and was executed June 17th, 2008.
Oh, dang, they
Yeah.
kept him around for a while.
It took a few years to do the psychiatric evaluations and stuff. They just kept like having different people analyze him.
Well, the world is better for
Sure
him not being here
fucking
anymore.
is. So, yeah.
Yeah. Well, that was horribly disturbing.
You're
So, thank
welcome.
you for that. Yikes. All right. Just take a little sip of my LaCroix here.
Yeah, tonight I have brisk lemon iced tea.
I have pineapple strawberry LaCroix. Okay. So, it took me literally forever to decide what I wanted to do with this. You can ask Matt. I seriously have a list of like 40 different names of people that I was considering doing. So I took the book that you gave me, the World Encyclopedia of Serial Killers, Volume 1. And I literally just like flipped through the whole thing looking for people who were not from America. And this book, like, probably like 65% of the people in this encyclopedia of serial killers are American,
Yeah.
which is crazy. Like, America, what the fuck?
Yeah.
But, okay. So I was looking, and there was a bunch of like Canadian ones that I consider, but I'm like, Canada's too close to us. Like, fuck them. Sorry, Canada, we love you. And then I noticed that almost everyone I was finding was a white man. Yeah. So I was like, okay, well, I want men because I feel like we haven't really talked about women murderers a lot. I know I've done a couple, but most of them were teenage girls, so I feel like that's a little different.
Yeah.
Yeah, so I wanted to pick a woman, and then I read about this lady, and I was just like, wow, that's really fucked up. So I chose the story of Mary Ann Cotton, and yeah, like I said, pretty fucked up. Mine is also child murdering. So this is gonna
We went
be
in kind of the same
in
direction today. A
yeah.
little bit.
I mean, mine's a woman in a white woman in England, but
I mean, neither of them are white men from America.
true. True. All right, so Mary Ann Cotton was born as Mary Ann Robson on October 31st, 1832. Halloween, spooky.
Close, baby.
she was born in Low Mursley in Durham County, England. There isn't really a ton known about her early life because, you know, she was born in 1832. We do know that her parents were named Michael and Margaret Robson. They were a pretty like devout religious family. They were pretty strict with their kids. Her father worked as a miner, and there was three kids total. Mary Ann was the oldest. So when Mary Ann was 8, her parents moved the family to another village within Durham County called Merton. And pretty soon after that move, Mary Ann's dad died. He fell 150 feet down a mine
Wow,
shaft
yeah, that'll do
and
it.
died. Yep. So, the house that the family had been living in at that time was sponsored by her dad's job. So, like, the mining company had housing for their employees. But after her father died, like, they're not eligible for that anymore because he's not working in the mines, obviously, because he's dead. So the family gets evicted. And so they kind of struggle along for about a year until her mom marries another miner named George Stott. And this is kind of when Marianne starts to change. So, like, up until this point, people has de they've described her as being like intelligent and well-mannered and of a quote-unquote innocent disposition. But after her mom marries George, Marianne starts getting real sassy. I couldn't find like exactly what was going on at this point, but basically Marianne did not like George at all. They didn't get along. Some things that I read said that he was overly disciplined, like he overly disciplined the kids to the point like bordering on abusive. Yeah, so basically he was an asshole and Marianne hated him, and then she started acting like an asshole too. So when she turns 16, she moves out to get away from her stepdad. And she moved to a village nearby called South Hetton, I think. Heaton? Hetton? I don't know. And then she becomes a nurse at the home of Edward Potter, who was the manager of the coal mine
Damn.
Merton, where her dad died. So that's pretty cool. So when they say nurse, I've figured out that in this case, it pretty much means nanny. So she basically helps take care of the kids and stuff. So she works there for 3 years, and then once all of the kids that she was watching were old enough to be shipped off to boarding school, she moved back home, and began to train as a dressmaker. So at this point, she's like 19. She was only home for like a year or so when she ends up marrying a coal miner, and his name is William Mowbray. That's in 1852, so she's 20. They got married and then they packed up and moved over to a village called Plymouth in Devon, in southwest England. So then they just start popping out kids,
As you do.
of course. Yep, so they have five fucking kids, and four out of the five of them die from gastric fever, which I don't really know what the fuck gastric fever is supposed to be, but basically it's like horrible stomach pains and like stomach problems. So after all that,
Poison.
after having five fucking kids, which is like so many fucking kids, they have one left. So then they decide that they're going to move again. So they move back towards where they were living before and settle in South Hetton, Heaton, which is where she had been like a nanny before. So then while they're living there, Marianne and William have four more kids because why the fuck not?
Yeah,
And
it's the ones you
then,
lost.
yeah, but then three out of those four kids end up dying too. So she from oh from gastric fever. And so she has two kids left, out of nine.
Yikes.
So, yeah. So then William, her husband, he ended up dying in January of
From
1865
gastric
from a
fever?
quote unquote from an intestinal disorder, it
Oh,
says.
poison.
Which seems pretty sketchy, but whatever. She collects the life insurance payout that they had on him, which was 35 British pounds, which back then was about half a year's pay for a miner.
Damn.
So not too shabby. So she gets this money and then she packs up her remaining kids and they move to another village nearby called Seaham Harbor. And there she ends up having an affair with a man named Joseph Natras. She's totally, completely in love with him, but he is engaged to someone else. So, you know, scandal. So Joseph gets married.
I was just thinking of, like, on My Favorite Murder, they have, what's his name, Joe Onions or whatever. Like, people with nouns as last names.
And I was, Paul
Onion. Yeah, Paul Onion.
Oh, his last name is Natras with an N, not Mattress.
Oh, I thought it was Mattress, and I was like, LOL.
That'd be way better.
Who are you
though.
Having an affair with? Mr. Mattress.
The Mattress King. Okay, so, yep, he's engaged to someone else. So when he gets married, she's, like, super sad. And then one of her only two kids left dies from, you guessed it, gastric
cancer. Wow.
So now she only has one kid left out of nine. And she's like, all right, I'm going to move again. So she takes that one kid and they move to a town called Sunderland, where she starts working as a nurse at the Sunderland Infirmary. Excuse me. I keep burping this LaCroix. So because she's like working and it's basically a hospital because she's working there, like she's working all the time. And so she sends that one remaining kid. It's a daughter named Isabella. She sends Isabella to go live with her mom. So Isabella is now living with her grandmother.
And the shitty stepdad?
So now it's just Marianne again. Because she just, like, pawned off her kid on
I mean, that's better than killing the kid.
Yeah. So now, like, at this point, Marianne is kind of known as, like, a hussy, basically.
Mm-hmm.
It started, like, when she was a nanny. All these rumors started going around that she was sleeping with all these different people at church. Like, all these people she went to church with.
Oh, damn.
Yeah, she was just trying to get on everyone's dick, and she just kept doing that even when she was at work, I guess. So, like, August of 1865, so this is, like, 7 months after her husband dies, she marries one of her patients from the infirmary. So she's, like, sucking her patient's dick, which seems highly unethical, if not illegal.
And just, like, how do you pick someone up when they're, like, in the hospital? Like,
no.
Hey!
Just, like, I know that you're dying of dysentery, but can I suck your dick? Like,
like, oh, your fever's down 3 degrees, but you still look just as hot to me.
Let me take your temperature, if you know what I mean. Yeah, so she marries one of her patients.
Okay.
His name is George Ward. He is an engineer, so this is her second husband now. So George is already sick to begin with, obviously, because he's in the hospital.
Mm-hmm.
So he does eventually get released from the hospital.
That's good.
But he continues to have problems with illness, and a little over a year after they got married, he dies in October of 1866 after a period of paralysis and chronic intestinal issues. Oh,
that's so weird.
I know, isn't it just crazy?
Dying from the same, like, problem.
It's so weird.
What a coincidence.
Yeah. That sucks. So, I know, it really sucks. But luckily for her, she just coincidentally had a life insurance policy on him, too. Mm-hmm. So she was okay. She got some money. And then that helped her be able to move on with her life pretty quickly.
Oh,
so that's
okay.
Nice. So a month after George dies, she is hired by a man named James Robinson as a housekeeper. So James Robinson was a shipwright, whatever the fuck that is, and his wife had, like, recently died, so he was, like, busy out on boats and shit all day, and he has a house and kids, including, like, a little infant, tiny newborn baby, that he needs to take care of, but he's like, okay, but I have to work.
No, he's gonna die from gastric fever.
So, yep, he hires Marianne to help him with the house. And a month later,
Please.
his little tiny baby died of gastric fever.
Please help me get rid of all my children.
I know. So Marianne just like swiggity suits on in there, like she does.
Looking for
And
that
pretty
booty.
soon she's pregnant with James's baby. Yep, she's just hungry for that D. That shipwright D helps prevent scurvy, I've heard, you know. So she gets pregnant with his baby. And then she hears word that her mom has become sick. So she went home to help take care of her mom. And then her mom gets better from whatever she was sick with. But then all of a sudden, after being better, she starts complaining about stomach pains.
What?
And then 9 days after Marianne arrives home to take care of her mom dies.
What a coincidence. God, she just has the worst luck.
Yep.
It's just following her.
I know. It must be the devil. I mean, so her mom dies, and so Marianne takes her daughter Isabella, who had been living with her mom, and they go back to James Robinson's house. So not long after they get there, Isabella starts having stomach issues, and so do two of James Robinson's kids. And then all three of them end up dying.
Whoa. This is
So
just the
now,
coincidence of the year.
I know. So at this point, all nine of the kids that Marianne has given birth to have died, and her basically like stepkids have also been dying. And I just want to know, like, how the fuck has no one suspected anything at this point?
Yeah.
Like, that's a lot of fucking people. Like, people are just like, oh yeah, this lady's kids keep dying, like all fucking 12 of them, whatever. Must just
I
be
mean, they
coincidence.
probably kept very, if they kept any hospital records, it was probably very slim. So if she just went to a different
Well, I
hospital
also
when all of her kids died, they might not ever connect it.
I don't think that they were even bringing them to hospitals though. Like, from the sounds of it, they would just like
Like,
maybe like house call a doctor like when it was too late to do
yeah, I mean,
anything.
if you just pick a different doctor every time, I'm sure house doctors didn't do any records of anything. It's just like,
Yeah.
oh, let me come in here. Okay.
Yep.
Wow.
Yeah. So Isabella and then the two kids of James who died, that was April 1867. And then James and Marianne get married in August, so like 4 months later. In November, Marianne gives birth to their daughter. But then the baby gets sick with all the same symptoms as the other kids. And then the baby dies in March of 1868.
Why
So.
do you just keep having babies when you're gonna kill them off? That seems like way too much work.
I agree. Also, is it worth it?
I don't
Like at
feel like
this
it's
point,
not.
this is 10 fucking pregnancies. You want to do that 10 times to wind up with no fucking
Nope.
kids? Like, yeah. So at this point, it like 13 kids, two husbands, and her mom have all died of gastric fever and stomach issues. Okay. So this is that's 16 people right there.
Damn.
So then Marianne kind of slips up a little and she starts begging James for money all the time and insisting that he buy life insurance and, you know, shit like that. So James starts getting pretty suspicious, which, like, find a fucking Lee. Someone's like, what the fuck, bitch?
Yeah.
So he starts doing a little digging around and he finds out that Marianne has racked up debts totaling 60 pounds, which is a shitload of money back then, because remember, 35 pounds is a half a year's pay
Yeah,
for a minor.
wow.
So almost like a year's salary worth of debt. So he goes to his remaining kids, the ones that she hasn't apparently gotten to yet, and he's like, okay, what the fuck is going on? And the kids tell him that Marianne has been forcing them to go like pawn off valuables from their home and give her the money. So after he finds that out, he's obviously really fucking pissed. So he kicks her out, throws her on the street. So yay, good job.
Good job.
Yeah, so he was like, bye, bitch. So now it's like late 1869. So she's been homeless and living on the streets ever since James threw her out, which good. And her friend, Margaret Cotton, decides that she is going to introduce Marianne to her brother Frederick, whose wife had recently died. Two of Frederick's kids had also died, which I couldn't find anything that told me how or why, but he had four kids, two of them died, and his wife died.
Gastric
So
fever.
Margaret,
They
not
both
yet.
poison each other, and then they both die. The
That's got to be it. That's what kids do. Just kid stuff. So her friend Margaret had kind of been acting as like a stand-in mom to her brother's like two remaining kids. So in March 1870, a few months after Margaret introduces the two of them, Margaret starts getting sick, and then she dies from a quote-unquote undetermined stomach ailment.
Don't kill Margaret. God fucking damn it.
Yep. So then Marianne does what she does best and swoops in on that dick of Frederick. So now he's lost his wife, his sister, and two of his kids. So she's just like, well, too bad. I'm coming to ride your pony. And then she gets pregnant again. Big surprise. So they get married in September of 1870. That's like 6 months after Margaret dies. But their marriage isn't legal since she's still technically married to James Robinson. So, like, James threw her out but didn't bother divorcing her. I don't really know. But she's quote unquote married to Frederick Cotton now. So this is her fourth husband. So she gives birth to their son in early 1871. And then she hears that her former lover, our buddy Joseph Natras, is no longer married and is living in a nearby town of West Auckland.
The Mattress
So she
King.
starts,
All
yes.
hail the Mattress
So
King.
she So she starts going to visit our buddy Joseph, in his mattress. And she convinces her fucking husband, Frederick, that they should move to this town where her lover is living. And he's like, yep, okay, let's go. So she convinced her husband to move to this town her lover's in so that it's more convenient for her to cheat on him.
Yeah.
Now she doesn't have to go as far.
Well, I'm glad that someone was into it because I was thinking about convincing Sean that we need to move. So now I know
Okay,
it'll work.
okay. It's
It's
doable.
doable.
So pretty soon after moving, Frederick starts to get really sick with stomach problems. And then December of 1871, he dies of, yep, gastric fever.
What?
So Marianne collects the life insurance money, and when she does that, she discovers that there is also life insurance on two of the three kids that she was left with. So two of the kids that she has are her stepkids, and then one is the baby that had just been born, like not even a year before. So the baby and then one of the stepchildren have the life insurance policies. So
Insurance for the
I'm not
Just like,
sure.
this
I don't
doesn't
think,
matter
well,
as much.
I don't think that she took out the policies like her husband did.
Yeah, but why would
So
you get life insurance for only some of your children?
I'm not sure, but that's what it said.
Okay.
So, yeah. So at this point, Joseph Natras like moves into her house and becomes a boarder, quote unquote. But really, they just fuck in. And then she goes out and gets a job as a nurse to, they call it an excise officer. I don't know what the fuck that is, but this dude's in the fucking hospital, whatever. He's recovering from smallpox. His name is John Quick Manning. And then she starts fucking him too, like she does. That's her
On
thing.
that hospital
And, yep. She's like, those smallpox.
if you just pull the curtain around, right, the people won't know what's happening next to them.
I guess. Yeah, so she starts banging him, and oh, what do you know? She gets pregnant with John's baby. So this is her 12th pregnancy. She is living with her lover, who she cheated on her last husband with, and she's sleeping with her patients at work. And then all of a sudden, one of her stepchildren and her little baby die in March of 1872. And you know, it ju they just happened to be the ones that Frederick had taken life insurance policies out on.
This lady needs to buy a lottery
So,
ticket. She
like,
just
I
is defying all the odds.
Yeah, so she, you know, very, very sadly brings her little self to the insurance agency and collects that money. And at that point, she also takes out a life insurance policy on the one kid that remains. So then Marianne goes to Joseph, her lover turned roommate, whatever the fuck, and she convinces him to make her the sole beneficiary of his life insurance. And then, what do you know? Pretty soon after, he gets sick with, yep, gastric
No,
fever and dies.
not Joseph, too.
Yep, so she gets all his money.
Wow.
So now, at this point, she has, you know, mysteriously lost three husbands, 15 kids, her mom, her friend, and her lover. So 21 people,
Holy
all from
shit.
gastric
She must be
fever.
a carrier or something.
Yeah, it's like Typhoid Mary.
Wash your hands, you filthy bitch.
She is a filthy bitch. So at this point, there's a guy named Thomas Riley who's like a leader in the church, the local church that Mary goes to, because she's still going to church for some
Even though
reason.
she slept with everyone?
Yep, she's sleeping with everyone and she's killing babies, but she's still going to praise the Lord.
She's gotta forgiveness for all those sins.
Yeah, I
A lot of fucking
guess.
church, girl.
Yeah. So this guy from the church named Thomas Riley goes to Mary Ann and asks her to be a nurse for this woman in the church who was sick with smallpox. So this is where Mary Ann fucks up. So she still has one of Frederick's children with her, like her third husband's kid. And to figure out, like, you know, if she's going to be a nurse to this sick lady, she can't bring the kid with her. So she goes to this Thomas Riley guy and tells him, like, oh, Charles, that's the kid that she's left with. She says that Charles is, quote unquote, in the way and asks him if he could, like, if she could have Charles committed to a workhouse. And then Thomas Riley tells her, like, you know, he's so young that if you wanted him to go there, like, you would have to go with him. And then she's like, oh, well, Charles is, quote unquote, sickly. And then she said, quote, I won't be troubled for long. He will go like all the rest of the cottons.
Wow.
So Thomas was like, I mean, he looks pretty healthy. Like, he looks fine. I don't, you know, okay. And then 5 days later, he finds out that Charles is dead and he is immediately suspicious as fuck.
Thank you.
So after Charles dies, Marianne goes to the insurance company to cash out the life insurance policy. And she went like immediately after he died. So like they didn't have a death certificate because he had literally just fucking died. So they tell her, like, we can't pay you the insurance payout until we see the death certificate, which, I mean, that's, you know, understandable. Yeah. So her going right to the insurance office after this kid dies makes some people really suspicious, and people start talking shit, as people do. And then the local newspapers picked up on some of the stories that are going around about her, and they start doing some investigating. So, like, her shit's so dirty that the newspapers are fucking investigating.
Damn.
Yeah. So they find out that Marianne has a habit of moving around a lot.
Mm-hmm.
And she has lost 22 people now around her, all from gastric fevers, yep, and stomach problems while she was taking care of them. So now the doctor who had taken care of Charles's body after he had died, luckily had kept some tissue samples from Charles's autopsy. So they tested the tissue samples and found out that there were traces of arsenic.
Mm-hmm.
She had literally just been fucking poisoning everyone, but, you know, we already knew that. But now other people know that. So the doctor reports it to the police, and Marianne's arrested, and the police order the exhumation of Charles's body, you know, to get some more evidence. Mm-hmm. So they charge Marianne with Charles's murder, but then the trial's delayed because she's still pregnant with John Quick Manning's baby, the last patient that she was screwing, the most recent patient screwing. Mm-hmm. So January 10th, 1873, she gives birth to a daughter, Margaret Edith Quick Manning, and then her trials for Charles's murder begin on March 5th, 1873. So she was allowed to, like, hang out with her baby and stuff for a little while, which I think is pretty generous of them given the circumstances.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
Yep. So at this point, she has given birth to 12 kids, and she has poisoned and murdered 11 of them, along with 5 of her stepkids.
Mm-hmm.
So, yep. So the trial starts. And Marianne's defense team tries to argue that Charles died from inhaling the arsenic that was used to dye the green wallpaper that was in their house.
Good try.
So, yeah, they're trying to say that this kid was, like, huffing the wall, and that's how he died of arsenic poisoning. So, no. It took the jury all of 90 minutes to find her guilty.
Good.
yeah. And she was sentenced to death by hanging, just like
yours. Oh, I could.
Yeah. So March 24th, 1873, she was hung at the Durham County Jail. And then it was later announced that her death had not been caused by her neck breaking in the hanging. She actually strangled to death because the rope had been rigged up too short. So the fall wasn't far enough to create the force necessary for her neck to break. So she ended up hanging there, like, being slowly strangled to death instead of dying instantly.
Good.
Like she would have if her neck had just snapped.
Good.
So a lot of people think that that was done on purpose so that she would have to just suffer for a while. Yeah,
she deserves it.
I hope it was on purpose. yeah, and that's it. That's the story of Marianne Cotton. A dumb bitch.
Good job.
Thanks. Yep, I was like, what the fuck? Like, I can't imagine having a baby on purpose to keep it, let alone having 12 just to murder them.
Yeah.
Like, pass.
Yeah, hard pass.
Like, maybe she just really liked being pregnant, but didn't like what came after.
I mean, maybe.
I think she... I don't know. I mean, or she was just a greedy bitch.
Yeah, probably that one.
But then, like, I don't know. Like, why kill your mom and your friend? Like, you don't have life insurance policies on them.
Okay, so her mom, she might, if she's the oldest kid, she might be the beneficiary. Or she might get, like, most of
maybe.
It. Or she might be in charge of it. Like, I know it was different then.
But, like, As far as I know, the stepdad was still alive, so wouldn't he as her
It
husband?
depends what the mom wrote. Because
Hmm.
my mom's already told me that I have to deal with all her shit.
Oh,
She's
that's
like, yep,
nice.
you're gonna deal with all my shit when I die, right? And I was like, I guess.
Being the oldest
Yeah.
sucks.
And she's also like, since I was like 12, she's been like, okay, so when I die, I want you to cremate me, and then I want you to go on a trip and put me in the ocean. And I was like,
Just come visit
okay.
me.
No, she wants to be in the Florida Keys or like near the off the
Okay.
Florida coast.
Okay.
So, yeah, so I have some ashes to scatter. Yeah.
Not
Not
yet.
yet, but well, she does have part of my grandfather's ashes, and I know he was supposed to be scattered off the coast, but I don't think he ever was. And I don't know what happened to my grandma, but if they were both cremated, I could just mix them together and throw them in the ocean.
Yeah, just do it all in
Yeah.
one.
I was like,
Yeah, my mom doesn't tell me what to do when she dies, so
my mom is
I'm like you.
very like, here's what you're gonna do. She's like, you're in charge of planning everything. She's like, Trent won't know how to function. You have to do it. And I was like, okay, thanks, I guess.
Yeah.
So,
That's like my grandma. My grandma's like that every single year for as long as I can remember. She's like, okay, this is gonna be my last Christmas. And I'm like, Grandma, it's been like 25 years. Like, she's like, it's my last Christmas. I just know it. I can feel it. And she's like, when at my funeral, she tells me all the time, she's like, I want you to sing at my funeral, and your cousins are gonna do ballet. And I'm like, I'm not gonna sing at your funeral, Grandma. She's like, but don't sing Amazing Grace. I hate that song. And my cousin is always like, she is a horrible, terrible singer. And she's like, Grandma, I'll sing at your funeral. My grandma gets so pissed off. But yeah, every time she's like, I feel like every year she rewrites her will and she tells me all the time, she's like, you're my only grandchild who's interested in music. So when I die, you get my piano and my guitar and like all this stuff. She's like, and you're also the only grandkid who's into like crafting. So you get all my sewing machines. And she's like, going on. I'm like, Grammy, you have like 40 grandkids. But yeah, she's always talking about who gets her shit when she dies. And I'm like, all right, well, this is Christmas, so we're gonna stop talking about
I
that.
only wanted one thing when my grandmother died, and I don't know where it went. And I really need to talk to my aunt and see what happened to it because I wanted my grandma always had this set of like Russian nesting dolls, and I loved them so much
Ooh.
as a kid. Like they were hand painted, they were gorgeous. And so I thought it would be really cute because I don't remember how many there were, but she has like 8 or 9 grandkids. So I always thought it would be really cute if like we went from oldest to youngest and like each got one. Well, or if no
Yeah.
one else wants them, I will take all of them. But I always loved them and they just had this like nice wood smell and like I don't know.
That's
I'm gonna text
sweet.
my aunt and see where they are. I'm gonna Facebook message my aunt because I forgot she lives in Spain right now, so I can't text her.
Which aunt is that?
My
Valerie?
mom's sister Valerie.
Okay. I was like, I remember one of them moved, but I don't remember which one.
Yeah, not the author one that's writing a book. Yeah, and then they moved to Spain like a year ago. It was sometime after my wedding. But yeah, so they're gonna be there for 2 years, and she's like teaching Spanish. She went back and got her master's in Spanish literature, so she's been like studying a lot. Yeah, so she did that while she was taking care of my grandma, and then she went to go teach English in Spain, so that's pretty cool. And she's like, oh yeah,
That's
you can come visit me. And like when my mom like lost her job in January, and like she was really excited about it, but that's another story. But anyways, so She was really excited, and so she was like, "Yes," and she knew it was coming for a few months, and she was like, "This is my end date." And so she had set it up where her and her other sister would go visit Spain, to go, because there's three sisters, so they were going to go visit. And my other aunt ended up not being able to go, because of a bunch of other like stuff that was going on. But my mom still went. So my mom just like went to Spain to go visit her sister for like 2 weeks, and it was like towards the end of Spain. So she got back into the country like right at the end of February and
Oh, dang.
like, beginning of March. Yeah, it was like just the perfect timing right before COVID hit everything, and like yeah, so. It was really good timing. So I wish I could go visit my aunt, but I don't know when that's gonna be able to happen. But she was very much like, yeah, come visit me. So
Shoot. Oh.
yeah.
Well, that's cool as fuck, and I'm really
Yeah.
jealous because the farthest trip I've taken was to Walmart yesterday. So cool.
Yeah.
You have anything that you would like to share as a final statement of sorts?
Yes, I do. This is one that's very important to me.
Okay.
About 2 months ago, I had this recovered memory of this game that I used to play. It was called Toontown. Did you play Toontown?
No, we were poor and I didn't have internet, so.
Sean just yelled from the other room, "No one else played Toontown." There are other people that played it, but anyways, I don't know if you remember the commercials, but like you pick your character and then you like throw pies that like is the thing that people remember. But anyway, so it's a Disney
Yeah.
game, and you can pick your character. So you can be like a mouse or a bear or a fox or whatever, like kind of Disney character thing, and you make your character. And basically it's like corporate cogs are coming to take over your world. So they're all like corporate little machine like robots. And so you have to like battle them with jokes and laughter is how you defeat them. So yep. Which is why you
Okay.
throw pies at them, because that's like a gag. And then you can like squirt them, throw water on them. There's some other stuff. You can like drop things onto them, but I'm not at that level yet. So, anyways, this girl posted, and I'm in a group called There's an MFM group for that. And people will post to be like, hey, is there an MFM group for people who also like this thing? And so she posted and was like, is anyone playing Toontown Rewritten? And I was like, excuse me, what? And then she was like, yeah, there's like a new version of Toontown out and it's free, because eventually you had to end up subscribing to the game to play it. But she's like, yeah, these people like copied it like pretty much exactly and recreated the game so you can get on it and play it. And I have been so hardcore into it. Like, I played this game when I was like 9 and I forgot about it for years, but it's so much fun. So, I'm very excited to have Toontown back in my life. Feel like a kid again. So, that's very important to me.
I am very excited for you.
Toontown. You should play it. You would love it.
Boy. Let's see. I started going back to therapy this week, which is
Good for
great.
you.
After I had like a mental breakdown like 2 weeks ago, I was like, okay, I need to start seeing a therapist. But the last therapist that I had out here anyway, she was nice, but like, I don't know, we just didn't really click. Like, she was pretty old, and like, I would have to, like, your session's only so long, and I would have to spend so much of my time like explaining the context of things for her, because she like didn't know what Twitter was and like all this stuff. So, because she's old as fuck. I don't know. So I don't know. I just didn't really like look forward to going to therapy at that point. So I wasn't really motivated to go.
Yeah.
It's like my therapist that I had before I moved out here, She was fucking amazing and I loved her so much. And like throughout my week, I would like make a list and be like, oh my gosh, I have to tell Stacey about this. Like write a list of shit that I had to talk to Stacey about. And every week I'd roll in and be like, Stacey, guess the fuck what? And so, yeah. So I stopped seeing the lady that I was seeing out here because I just wasn't clicking with her. And so I told the nurse, like, when you call, they have like the nurse who answers the phone and stuff. I'm like, can you just assign me to a random, like, therapist? I'm like, I just request that it's a woman because I have men trust problems. And I'm like, I would prefer someone like a little bit younger. But yeah, so she gave me a new one who's super sweet. And I've only had one session with her, but I really liked her. And I think that it's gonna work out well with her. So that was good. And that at the end of that appointment, she was like, well, she's like, I think that, you should get in with your psychiatrist to get your meds evaluated like right away because there are obviously some problems. And my usual therapist that I see, she is really awesome. I really like her, but because she's so awesome, like everybody wants to see her. So she was booked out until like almost September at that point. Yeah, so she was like, okay, well, I'm just gonna give you this random therapist or this random psychiatrist, whatever, who is also a woman, because that was my thing. And she's like, and then she'll call you in like 2 days and you guys can have like a phone appointment. So the therapist called me and I, had to tell her like a shit ton of stuff. And at the end of the appointment, she was like, well, I think I know what's going on. She's like, from everything you're saying and from your files and stuff, she's like, I'm pretty sure that you've been misdiagnosed. Because like ever since I started with like mental health treatment, I was probably like 19. I've always been told like, okay, you have, severe depression and you have this anxiety problem and you have like PTSD and these panic things and like I have problems with eating disorder and that kind of stuff. So I was like, okay. And she was like, yeah, if that was what is happening, all this medicine that you're on should be helping you. Because all the time that I've been taking medication for mental health, like it would help my depression, but I never had anything that helped my anxiety ever. Nothing helped it. And then all this other stuff was like, oh yeah, this should also help with your eating disorder, and this should also help with these panic issues that you have. And it only ever helped the depression. So she's like, well, the reason might be, she's like, all of those symptoms combined are like representative of another like disorder, like those all fit into another disorder, and that could be why the medication isn't working for you. And she's like, yeah, like it sounds like you have borderline personality disorder or possibly like some form of bipolar, because there are multiple forms of bipolar. And then I had, of course, I've heard of borderline personality disorder, but I didn't really know anything about it. And so she kind of like briefly went over a few things that it entails. And every single thing that she said, I was like, yep. And she's like, yeah, I'm gonna have you fill out some assessments and we're gonna do a little more, like tests and stuff to see for certain if it is borderline or bipolar or maybe both, because it's possible to have both. She's like, before, we prescribe any medicine or anything. But yeah, so that is what's going on. She's like, yeah, I see notes from your therapist that she suspects that you have borderline. And I was like, what the fuck? She didn't even tell me that. Like, I was like, this is literally the first time anyone has ever said that to me, ever. And then I was reading all about it. Like, of course, after that appointment, I did tons of research. And I was like, what the fuck? Like, it literally feels like they wrote all this about me. Like, I've never found anything that accurately puts onto paper, like, what is going on inside my head. And, like, I got really pissed off because I was like, how has nobody said this before? Like, all this time, I have been like trying to do all these things and go to these different therapy things and all these different medications and stuff, and nothing has been working. And I have all of these things, but nobody has put together that it could be this. Like, what the fuck? And I mean, it's been almost 10 years, and I'm just now being told, like, you probably have this. So I took it pretty hard initially. And I spent the rest of that day researching and crying. And I was like telling Matt, I was like, I'm fucking crazy and you're gonna leave me. And like
Yep.
going off the deep end. And that's one sign of borderline. That's one symptom of borderline is this horrible nonstop fear that everyone's going to abandon you. No one actually likes you. And yeah, you can't trust anyone because you're just scared that they're going to abandon
When
you.
you sent me the pictures of the questionnaires that you had filled out, I was like, okay, like I want to look these over. And then I checked like 8 or 9 out of 10 on both of them, I think. And I was like, I need to reevaluate where I'm at and go back to therapy because it's like, even if I'm not doing these things right now, like I still have done all of them at some point or, most of them. So I was like, I really need to like at least be seeing someone about this and just like keep an eye on it. But
Well, and because like bipolar and mood disorders like that run in my family,
same.
So she's like, yeah, that automatically, like, she's like, especially like with borderline, they're not 100% certain if there is a genetic component, but there's too much evidence for it to rule that out. So, she's like, and it's always possible, like, one mood disorder genetically, like, that doesn't mean necessarily that you could get that mood disorder, but it does make you more prone to mood disorders in general. So I have quite a few family members who have things like that. So
Same, both sides.
unfortunately, yeah. Yep.
So.
Me too. So unfortunately with bipolar, you can take mood stabilizers and stuff, and that will pretty much put you where you need to be. With borderline, though, there isn't really a medication for it. They can prescribe you mood stabilizers to kind of just help you. Because one huge thing for borderline is you kind of feel emotions like super intensely, which has always been something that people have pointed out to me, Matt especially. He has always said, like, I feel like you feel things a lot stronger than an average person does. Like, if I am, like, everything is black and white. There's no gray. Like, I'm either really happy or I'm really fucking mad. Like, I don't have an in between. And yeah, so you just feel everything like super intensely. So mood stabilizers can like help with that, but the only thing that's really proven effective for borderline is like lots of intensive like therapy, behavioral therapy and stuff. So with that in mind, like I have another appointment next week with my psychiatrist to kind of finalize a diagnosis and then, get put on meds if she deems it necessary. But I ended up deciding to go down to part-time at my job because if I need to be going to hardcore intensive therapy, because my brain's fucked up, then I'm not going to be able to go to work all the time. And also, honestly, work makes me super depressed and makes me want to die. So, no work. Yeah. And honestly, if I didn't get health insurance through my job, I would just quit full force. Like,
Yeah.
but I can't afford to go to those therapy appointments and stuff if I don't have health insurance. So, stuck with the job.
Yeah.
Yeah. But luckily, my boss was like, she handled it really well. Like, I was just like, yeah, because I've been out sick for like 3 weeks for physical sickness. I mean, but also mental, but I've only told them about the physical. And so I kind of told her, like, look, I've also been dealing with a lot of mental health issues, and I've started seeing a new therapist and a new psychiatrist, and they have both told me that they want me to, well, they wanted me to quit completely, but like cut back. So she's like, okay, like we'll work it out. So she put me down to 2 days a week, which is, that's fine. I can do 2 days. So we'll see how that goes.
Yeah.
I'm not playing any fun games, but I'm going to therapy.
The most fun game because it fixes your brain.
Yes. Not like this is guaranteed to raise your IQ.
Yeah, Toontown will definitely not raise your IQ. But it'll distract you from the problems that you're currently having, so.
That's true, but I think another one of my problems is too much distracting from my problems. It's called denial. And yes, and
Yeah,
so I'm trying to be
I really
responsible.
need to get my driver's license updated because I don't actually live in Illinois. I live in a state of denial. So I wonder if they can put that on their phone.
Yes. Yeah. So I'm trying to be responsible and proactive. I ordered a borderline like workbook that has like different therapy exercises and stuff you can do on your own time
Oh, I
to
need to get one
kind
of
of help
those.
you. Yes, it was like $15 on Amazon. It should be here. I haven't checked my mail yet today. But should be here today. So yeah, gonna just start trying to be proactive. I've talked with quite a few people about it now, because I found that that's kind of the best way to, get some insight into it. And I guess that borderline is a really hard disorder to diagnose because it presents itself as so many other disorders, which is probably why it took so long to figure out that that's most likely what's going on with me. But I guess that the biggest issue that they have with people, getting treated for this is most people who have it, like, don't believe that they have it. They're in complete denial. A lot of them have similar traits to like narcissistic personality disorder. So they're like, there's no way I have this. Like, no. So I guess that admitting that you have the problem is the biggest thing that you can do for your treatment with borderline. So I guess I'm already on the
Yay,
way.
good for
So high five to me.
you. Get a gold star.
I get a gold star and a LaCroix and a one-way ticket to the therapist's office. So yeah. Yeah, so as much as that kind of made me upset and worried and all kinds of other stuff, it's also pretty relieving to finally have something where it's like this makes so much sense. This, is what is wrong with me. So, or not wrong with me. I shouldn't say that, but
What's prohibiting you
So,
from living your best life right now?
yes, it's my brain.
Same.
Yeah. So, yeah, I felt very personally attacked. And now I'm working on it.
Good for you.
Oh, also, I ate 16 Crab Rangoons today. So that's my other thing.
Proud of you.
Thank you. We bought 2 boxes of the frozen Crab Rangoons that you just bake in the oven. And I ate both of them myself. While Matt was in the shower so that he couldn't have any.
Sucks to suck, Matt.
And then he's like, did you eat both of those? And I was like, well, they're for me. And he's like, okay. And then he just kept eating cereal out of the bag. So, yep. That's my goodness. Crab Rangoons.
That is goodness.
Yeah. So, did we decide on something for next week?
I
can't remember if we did.
I don't think so. I don't know.
So, thank you for listening and putting up with our bullshit.
Thanks.
And yeah, thanks, guys. We hope that you were thoroughly spooked
and crapped to the maximum level of crappy that we can achieve.
Yes. Yes. And we will be back next week with our favorite episode of Forensic Files, cases, and we will spoop and crep you again.
Yep.
Hopefully. That's the goal.
That's the goal every week.
Yes. I don't know if we ever accomplish that goal, but we have fun.
We
time,
do.
That's what matters.
What matters. Exactly. Gold stars for us.
So thank you for letting us have fun.
Thanks.
While we try to spoop you.
It's a good times.
Yeah. Okay, so everyone, make sure that you're brushing your teeth and drinking lots of water and taking your pills. And we will see you guys next week.
Okay, bye.
Okay, bye.